Should we get started?
All right, I think they're about to lock you all in, so we'll get started.
Fantastic. Just out of curiosity, did everybody get their Surface Pros and those Acer tablets yesterday? They look pretty sweet.
Super sweet, yeah.
We don't get them. You guys get to see them. I'd love to see one. So I'm Polita Paulus. I am a program manager on the Windows team.
And my name is Ryan J. Salva. I'm a PM on Visual Studio.
And we're going to talk about creating your very first application using HTML and JavaScript for Windows today. And this is a basics talk. If you guys have already built one of these applications, then this might not be the right talk for you. And maybe pick something else on the list. But if you have never built an application you're looking to, or you've built a XAML application or a DirectX application, and you're looking to switch over and try something in HTML, this is the right talk. If you're looking for just the new content between WinJS 1.0 and 2.0, there was a talk yesterday by Paul Gasmarino called What's New in WinJS 2.0, and you can find that online in a day or two when all those talks go online, and I encourage you to check that one out. So what we'll talk about today is how to build, what is a Windows Store app built using HTML, and that's kind of a mouthful. I'm going to keep tripping over that. Let's just all agree to call them HTML apps, just within this room. And what is WinJS and how it fits into the picture for HTML apps? We'll cover the basics, and then we're going to spend almost all of our time building a demo app for our first app. So let's get started. What is a Windows Store app using HTML? Starting with Windows 8, there were three different programming styles that are supported to build an application for Windows. The first one is DirectX, and you can use C++ in DirectX. XAML and C++ or C# are supported, and HTML is supported.
My personal favorite.
Fantastic. Mine too. So what goes into choosing which platform you're going to choose? Really, you can choose any of them, and you can build an application using any of them. And what experience you have and the assets that you have and what your team members already know are probably the pieces that are going to be most relevant for you in choosing that platform. So an HTML app is written using HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. And these are the HTML, CSS, and JavaScript pieces that you already know and love today from the web. This is not a separate set of HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. We don't run a separate engine for any of this. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later. Like any web development you use, you can include your favorite JavaScript libraries directly within your HTML app. So jQuery, Dojo, Angular, Backbone, any of those, go ahead and include them directly within your HTML app and use them as you normally would.
Shout out for MooTools.
And as I said, we render all of this using Trident, not a separate Trident engine, the one in IE11. And that comes, you know, with your Windows 8.1 install. And so anything that you can do in IE11 is the same as how you would do it in an HTML app. We add layers of security so that your users, when they download your application, really can trust that those are safe and they understand what they're doing. And that's because your application has full access to WinRT. That means you can access devices, you can access geolocation, you can access the file system. All the things that you know and love with Windows are the pieces of power that you have directly within your HTML application. And of course, as any other application for the new Windows shell, it's designed for touch. Those buttons are far enough apart that you can hit them easily with a big finger. You can swipe left, right, and they nicely adapt to different orientations and different sizes, like those small tablets that you all got yesterday. And finally, Windows applications are deployed via the Windows Store, meaning that you upload your application to the Windows Store, and that's how you make money, and that's how you get users.
Cool, cool.
So Windows has taken a big bet on HTML. This is not a toy platform for us. These are just some of the applications that we have built first party and pre-installed for Windows. And you'll notice Mail there is our most popular application within Windows. And it was built using HTML and JavaScript and our WinJS library. We absolutely believe in this platform, and we think that you should too, and we think that you should use it to build your applications.
There we go.
So let's talk about the architecture of an HTML application. Our platform is Windows, as always, and that gives us access to devices and the file system and all those wonderful things that you know and love about Windows. And the WinRT box on the right there is the way that you access that power in Windows, and you can call that directly within your application. IE's rendering engine called Trident is how we render HTML, and as I said, that's the built-in one in IE 11. HTML, CSS, and JavaScript give us our layout and document engine, CSS for styling, and JavaScript gives us our dynamic typing language. WinJS is a small JavaScript authored library that you can use to build Windows style controls directly, to use Windows style controls directly within your application. And of course, your app sits on top doing innovative and awesome things. So let's talk a little bit more about that Windows library for JavaScript, or WinJS box. What's in there and what does it offer you? The first thing are style sheets. You get two style sheets by default, UI dark and UI light, and you get to choose between them. And just like any other CSS library, you can override anything in there to provide the styling that you really want for your application. Core pieces help you program against JavaScript in a more convenient way. For instance, promises are just like the promises that you would find in several other libraries for web apps. And they offer a way for you to write code against asynchronous programming models as if it were synchronous. So if you've used C#, for example, we have tasks and await, and it's much like that. And we'll see a use of promises in a bunch of places in our demo.
It's super easy syntax. Basically, you've got your XHR request, and then dot then, and then you put what happens next. We'll see it later on, but super elegant syntax. Love it.
Way better than a bunch of callback methods that you have to put somewhere else in your application.
Totes true.
Yeah. So classes and namespace definitions help you clean up and organize your code in a way that doesn't pollute the global namespace. The application model offers events that make sense for your Windows application. For instance, initialization, suspend, and resume. And we'll use those events to handle different things in our application. Data binding is a great way to add data to visual lists in a way that matches the UI, the personality of Windows. And those controls that you see, for instance, the zoom control in the shell in Windows, are controls that you can access directly within your application to build that Windows personality. Animations, we have a Windows animation library called PVL, and we can use that directly within WinJS to offer fluidity and nice personality for entrance and different kinds of things within our application.
We really look at animations as being just as much a part of the Windows experience as any of the other visual styling. So that kind of flat design that you hear so much talk about these days, well, the animation is just as idiosyncratic and unique to Windows as any of that other kind of more visual styling.
And utilities finally offer easy ways to do things like adding classes to elements.
Cool. So all of that seems super familiar and, well, not familiar. Maybe that's a little bit new, but like the concepts are the same, right? If you've done any kind of HTML, CSS, JavaScript development before, you can see how we're kind of dealing with some familiar ground. But there's a couple of differences that you got to consider as well from the web environment. So styling changes. If you're coming from a web environment where there's a browser, chances are your scrolling's all vertical. Your application might have a lot of really tiny links here and there and things like that. Well, people, when they come to a Windows Store application, they expect it to feel like a Windows Store application. That does mean that kind of authentically digital design, sharp edges. It often means horizontal scrolling as opposed to vertical scrolling. So UIDark and UILight.css kind of help bootstrap you on the way there, but you also want to think about that as you're creating your custom design, custom elements. Access to the Windows runtime. So there's all kinds of really great stuff that Windows gives you that you could not from within a browser. Access, like direct access to the file system, access to the web camera, access to geolocation, kind of all that stuff that only a desktop application would have typically had access to, now you have access to via your JavaScript application. Single page model. Really, what this is all about is two things. One, making it so that when elements appear and disappear, they do so and it doesn't feel like you've gone to a completely different page. It's kind of a fluid transition between one element or one navigation page and the next. And second, and here for me, this is probably the most important one, it's maintaining session state for the duration of the application. Every time you load and reload a page, if you're in a JavaScript application, if it were a normal web browser, that page refresh would clear out all of the variables in memory. Well, in order to maintain session state across multiple pages, the single page application model basically takes a host document, usually default.html, and just pulls in markup from other pages as you're navigating. That way, you maintain kind of the same session, same browser session, same WWA session, but you can actually grab content from other pages. Next, app sizes and orientations. Well, all those surfaces you got, super cool, but like they're a different size than this monitor that I've got here on my desktop. You can also turn them so that they're in portrait orientation versus landscape orientation. There are a myriad variety of different monitor sizes and kind of orientations, especially as you get to the half size and snapped view that you need to account for. So you'll need to respond to that in your application and your style sheets, typically using at media rules. Security context and enter HTML. So some of those kind of security sugar that Polita was talking about earlier, we put a couple of extra restrictions on the application to make sure that customers feel safe or users feel safe and that you're not really kind of abusing any of that power that we gave you through the Windows runtime access, that is power to like access to the file system and whatnot. One of the ways that we do that is through local and web context. Local context basically means that you have access to all of the goodies that the Windows runtime offers. Web context, on the other hand, means that you are free to pull content, well, from the web, although it doesn't have to come from the web. But you've got some extra restrictions on you, and usually that means that you don't have access to things like the file system. Someone who was a developer for, a web developer specifically, for about 13 years, one of my favorite things about the job was that there were so many browsers and so many different versions of those browsers to test for. It just really made my day. Unfortunately, we don't get that in the Windows Store world. We only get IE, and we get IE 11, our most modern browser, great support for CSS 3, and so we don't test for, or we don't have to develop for, all those different variations of kind of the runtime. And then finally, network connectivity. So typically, when you're coming in a web application, you know that they're connected to the internet. Otherwise, they wouldn't have gotten that page down. Well, with a HTML app, they could be online, they could be offline, they could be in a plane, they could be in a train, they could be with a mouse in a house, but wherever they are, they may not have Wi-Fi. And so you need to be able to kind of figure out what should your application feel like, what should the experience be when there's no Wi-Fi or network connection available.
So. Great, let's dive into a demo.
Yeah, so if you got an idea, let's actually go into it. So we're going to switch monitors here real quick. Give you a look at our desktop here.
And you all received Visual Studio 2013. We're going to go ahead and use that for our Win Basics demo.
Yeah. So we're just opening up Visual Studio. We're going to create a new project. We're going to create the simplest of projects. We're going to create one using the blank template. Now, VS provides 5 or 6 templates that you can choose from, each kind of encapsulating a kind of a design pattern or a common design pattern. The blank one is just that, a blank slate, contains only the bare minimum. If you take a look at kind of the file system here, what we've got in our Solution Explorer, you'll see we've got a pretty standard folder tree. We've got a folder for our JavaScript, one for our images, one for our CSS. Exactly the same kind of structure that you'd probably create for any HTML project that you started up. We're going to start by taking a look at default.html, our only lonely HTML file in the project. And there's not much here other than you'll notice a couple of references to our WinJS SDK and then a couple of files that you can customize yourself in the form of default.css and default.js. Well, content goes here is, okay, ho-hum. Let's kind of customize that. We'll remove that. We're just going to kind of put in a div. We'll give it an ID of my div. Let's be creative here. Why break with tradition? Let's just say hello world.
How about hello build?
Hello build. Okay. All right.
Build.
Hello there build.
All right. Should we run it?
Yeah, let's run it. Let's do it. Congratulations. We just created our first JS app. Good times. All right. Well, it's probably not going to make you the millions in the Windows Store, so let's elevate our game here a little bit. We're going to open up default.js, and we're going to start to throw some WinJS controls on the page. Now, there are two ways to create WinJS controls. The first is imperatively or through code. So we're just going to kind of do a little bit of magic here. When the app loads, kind of on initialization or on activation, if you will, this event gets fired, the onActivated event handler that you see that we're in right now. When the page loads, WinJS kind of runs through this, and we're just going to grab onto that element ID. All the HTML is already loaded by this point, so we know that div is there. And we are going to create a date picker from that. Super simple.
Date picker, you said?
Date picker. Let's do date picker. All right. And we just feed it that element as an argument. All right. Let's run from here. Okay. There we go. So now we're getting a little bit more complicated. This time, our hello build has been replaced with a date picker. That date picker, really, it's kind of like any kind of JavaScript widget that you would have seen in the last, I don't know, 7, 8, 9, 10 years. It's really a collection of divs and spans that have been uniquely styled to look like a Windows control. All we did is just kind of take what was originally our div with an ID of hello world and inject a bunch of new content in there via that WinJS control.
And of course they work great with touch.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Nice and big and already pre-populated with today's date. Yeah, cool. So I said there were two ways to get WinJS controls on the page. The second way is through the declarative model. In other words, we're just going to declare it as an attribute in our HTML.
Okay, let's take out this code.
Yeah.
We'll head over to our default.html.
Excellent. So we're going to take that same div, and this time we're going to add an attribute to it called dataWinControl. This essentially announces to WinJS that I want to convert this into a control. And we're going to convert this one into a time picker.
Time picker.
Okay. Yeah, just to show we're doing something different. Now, we don't have to feed it the element this time because, well, it's already on an element. This will get picked up when the application initializes. And, oh, is there a time picker on there? Yeah, super, awesome. So two ways, imperative and declarative. One thing that I do want to make a quick little note of, if we go back to default.js, where that happened, where that div got converted from a normal hello build div into a time picker is right on that process all method. What that process all method does is it combs through the HTML of our document looking for any element with an attribute of data win control. There's a couple other ones. Data win options is another good one as well, and you'll see that later. It's just looking through elements with those attributes, and then it knows, hey, I need to do something special with this, looks at the value. In this case, it said make it a time picker and converted it to a time picker. All right, so now you've got the super duper basics. I bet we can up our game a whole lot from there. Let's do it.
Great. Let's shut this one down.
Yeah.
And we'll close out our simple app. We'll do something more complicated. Oh. So, I love San Francisco, and one of the things I love about San Francisco is all the great options to get around using public transportation.
But I've used at least three so far.
Have you really?
I have. Car, BART, and walk.
That's pretty good. Yeah, so of all these options, it can be really hard for somebody outside the city to understand all of my options. So let's build an application that helps us work with some of these transportation options. And we'll build an app that's part of the hub model. And you might have seen this hub model in other applications that are already pre-installed. So think the food and drink application that you saw in the keynote yesterday, or the news application, or the Windows Store. And this hub model is really a great way to put different types of data and different types of UI into a single page and be able to access them all. So we're going into Blend. And can you talk a little bit about Blend?
Yeah, Blend is, it's part of Visual Studio. It's really just kind of the complement to, if Visual Studio is where you go to do all your heavy lifting in terms of JavaScript debugging and coding, Blend is where you go to build your UI. And so we're going to, since we're going to start with really the UI of this transit app, we're going to start in Blend. You could do new project from Visual Studio as well. We're just, because it's kind of easier to add and remove large sections of our UI, we're going to start in Blend.
Great.
Fantastic.
We'll create that hub application.
All right.
We called it San Francisco Transit. Perfect. And let's see what we get out of the box with this.
Can do.
Fantastic. Let's run it.
And I just control F5 to run that. I will be doing that many times throughout the...
And it looks like a hub. On the left side, you see this big, ugly gray box. And that's where we might put a hero image, something that really expresses some of the personality of our application and is nice and scalable for big spaces for some of our other devices when you rotate them. And, you know, the gray box doesn't look great, but... let's work with that for now. And then we get a bunch of default sections that are kind of samples there to show you how you might add sections to your hub. And you'll notice that a couple of those sections, section 2, and if you scroll across, I think section 5 maybe, have little chevrons next to the section header.
Just two.
Yeah. Well, go ahead and click on that. That chevron says you can click on it and drill down into a page that gives you more information about that section. So that's an interactive section versus section 3, which is non-interactive.
Exactly. Can't click on it. Can't go anywhere.
Great. So those are great, but we're going to customize those to something that makes more sense for us in our application. So let's look for a second at the files, too, that we got with this application. And these are organized much like the files that you would in a web page. For each page, logical page that we have, we have a folder with our CSS file, our JavaScript file, and our HTML file. And these are all loaded into the application at the right time for that context.
Basically, these are loaded when you load that particular page. So they're not all loaded on application initialization, but rather they're loaded on navigation.
And under references, if you expand that,
sure.
We can see our WinJS 2.0 reference as well. And if you were to double click on that, you could actually see all of the source code that goes into WinJS. So great.
Awesome.
Let's get to work customizing this. That big gray box is kind of bothering me. Ryan, what can we do?
You know what? What is more iconic about San Francisco than the Golden Gate?
And what Ryan's doing here in the live demo, or live DOM window, is he's using just regular CSS selector syntax to filter down to exactly the elements he wants to find.
In this case, I just wanted to find that hero image. I knew it had a class of hero, so I searched for .hero. I'm going to replace this big gray PNG with a glorious, majestic picture.
That looks much better.
Yeah.
And along the lines of making it look a little better, maybe we can change the background color as well.
Here, I'm just going to search. I'm going to filter down my CSS properties. There's like 366 CSS properties out there, way too many. So a nice little filter makes it easier to find. And I'm going to try to make it kind of the color of the Golden Gate here. Okay. I didn't know the Golden Gate was that color. JPEGs
maybe
are complex
something a little
things.
Rustier, yeah. Not quite so salmon-y.
All right. That's good. We'll go with that.
Yeah, that looks nice.
All right. Excellent.
Fantastic. And now let's get rid of those sections. They're great samples, but we don't need to see all of those default sections in there. We're going to add our own content. So Ryan's going to delete each one of those sections.
All right. Goodbye, sections.
Great. And the first thing I think we want to do is add a Muni map. The Muni system is the bus system in San Francisco, and it's pretty big, so I'd love to see a map of the city and where I can get to on the Muni lines.
So what I did here is I just went to my assets pane, which contains all of the WenJS control and HTML intrinsic assets. I searched for section, I found hub section. I double-clicked on it to add it to my page, and there it is for me right there.
Let's go ahead and call that Muni.
Okay. Done.
And we saw before that some of those sections are interactive, meaning that Chevron lets your users know that they can click on it. This is just going to be an image, so let's make it static rather than interactive.
And you can see as soon as I check that, the little Chevron went away.
And let's add an image that's the map for the Muni system. We're going to get this directly from the Muni website.
And I'm going to do the same thing here. I'm going to add an image. And okay, so you guys don't have to watch me typing. I'm going to use some little hotkeys here that just kind of have shortcuts to some of these values. That is not actually a feature of the product, but does make it much faster for me to type in long, complicated URLs. All right, I've got the image in there.
It's huge.
It's ginormous.
Oh my gosh. So we've got this great touch interface on almost all these computers that you guys got.
Look how big that is.
It's huge.
High resolution.
It would be great if we could actually use some of those pinch to zoom and other touch features so that we could shrink this down and make it easier to navigate around, kind of like Bing Maps does.
Fortunately, we've got this brand new feature. These sort of, they're called content zoom properties, and it's just CSS properties. They are specific to IE and to Windows, and they essentially allow users to zoom any content in or out using touch functionality. So let's do that. Let's add it to this guy. Zoom. All right.
And what Ryan's using is the properties pane, and he's using a little shortcut that lets him both search for and set properties at once.
Yeah.
So you can put your property name and the value right in that window, and it just sets it all at once.
And you'll notice that I was actually able there to set multiple properties all at the same time. It was just a long string of multiple property value pairs. And in this case, I said content should be zoomable. The smallest, this is the minimum. The smallest it should ever be is, well, the actual size of the image, and the largest it should ever be is 6 times the size of it, right? So ginormous. But it's still huge here. Well, the reason for that is I haven't yet set kind of the starting width of the image. So I'm just going to grab this guy right here. On the artboard, shrink him down. There we go, to
nice.
A reasonable size.
Yeah.
I'm going to zoom back in so that I'm actually not way out there. Perfect. There we go.
Great. Does it work?
I hope so. We're going to run it real quick. I just hit Control F5 to run. I happen to have a touch screen here.
Oh, look at that.
There we go.
And as it zooms in, you get that nice resolution where it actually resolves it from being fuzzy to being nice and sharp. And IE takes care of that for us.
And I can kind of scroll around on here just using my finger. Look at that.
That's pretty smooth.
That is pretty smooth.
Fantastic. Well, Muni is great. I like the BART system too. And the BART system actually gives us a bunch of data on their website for stations and for train arrivals and departures. So let's make a section for BART.
So we're going to need to go out and get data from the web for that, right?
Yeah, and they have an RSS feed, so we'll use that to access data.
That means if we're going to go and do any coding, we should probably go to Visual Studio. That's the best place to do that.
All right.
So all I've got to do,
this one.
Right-click, and edit in Visual Studio. We're going to open up that very same project in Visual Studio. Give it a second to load there. Voila. All right, I'm going to get this output pane out of our way, and we are ready to cook.
Let's add a new section for BART.
So that's going to need to be added to the hub page. That's how you get into that section. And here we go. I'm going to add that guy right before the Muni section here. So, and to format this guy, Control-K, Control-F. And now it's nice and pretty.
Great.
Okay.
And this time, instead of having a non-interactive header, we're going to make that interactive so that somebody can click on that and drill into those stations. So now we've set on header invoked, and we've given it the name of our method that's actually going to happen when you click on that chevron. And again, we have a system map directly from the BART website, and that'll give us our station maps.
Cool.
So let's go ahead and fill in those station pages.
All right.
And that's in our section. So the section is the name for the first level of data that we're going to see when you click on that header that says BART.
Yeah, totally. And so once that section page loads, we probably need to go get the data, right?
Yeah.
First thing to do. Let's do it.
And we're going to do it pretty much the same way that you would do this in a web page. A lot of this code is going to look very familiar. I want to call out a couple things that may look new to you. That winjs.namespace.define BART data, that's one of those utilities that you get from WinJS, and this helps us define a namespace and some variables that we can access outside of this page without polluting the global namespace. And then we're just going to call XHR, and this XHR, WinJS's XHR, just is like the XHR you would call, but it wraps it in a promise so that when that XHR comes back, we can just say dot then and deal with all that code.
Here's that beautiful syntax I was talking about. Love it.
It's pretty fantastic. So we'll go through that data and loop through each of the stations that we're getting back, and we're going to save off a bunch of pieces of data from each one of those stations. We're going to save off the name of the station, the abbreviation for the station, and then the date and time that we're actually getting data for so we know when it's stale. And then along with each station, this RSS feed gives us ETAs for the trains that are coming and going from that particular station. So we're going to loop through that as well and save off that data in a list that hangs off of each one of these station objects. And for both of these types of lists, we're putting them in a WinJS binding list. And the WinJS binding list just makes it easy for us to track changes and bind that to our UI control.
Awesome.
So fantastic. Now that we are actually downloading that, let's call that function somewhere.
All right.
And make sure we're binding to the data that we got.
So we're going to do that up here.
Now, this page had a list view on it, and that came directly from our template.
Okay.
And we're going to set the item data source, the data that list view is going to show, to our BART data.stationList. And that was our namespace that we defined.
Which means we no longer need this one. This was the one that came with the template. Bye-bye.
Great.
Awesome.
So now we should be seeing all those stations inside of our drill down page, but we haven't defined any UI for what that's going to look like. So let's go ahead and define some UI for that station page.
Now, one thing to do first, when the item's invoked, we need to make sure that we navigate over to our item page.
When somebody clicks on that.
Yeah.
Good point.
So we're going to do that in the item invoked method down here. Once again, we had what was kind of the default stuff. We're going to do our own little custom bit here. So let's call invoked. There we go. So here, all that we're doing is we're going out and we're feeding it the item page, all of our station data, instead of what was available in the template. There was some just kind of default data that gets bundled with the hub.
Yeah, and we're just accessing that list, saying, get me the index of that item at that list. And then we're going to pass that item, that station data item, onto that that item page so that we can show more details about it.
You got it.
So now let's go define the UI.
Okay. So,
if UI. Any of you have used other templating systems from Knockout, for instance, or other libraries, our templating system is similar, where you can define your UI and then bind the pieces of your UI directly to your data model. So we're going to do some of that.
Okay. So our template is defined here, where all UI gets defined in the HTML file. And this is the template that's essentially going to get stamped out for each station. We're just going to replace the one that comes bundled with the hub template with our own custom one. Oops. Oh, it's going to make me retype it. Dang, these hotkeys. There we go.
Great. And so that template, if you look at what it's doing, it's got a couple headers. That H2 is being data bound by that data win bind statement. And that basically says, in my data model, I've got a property named name. Pull that out and put it into the text content of that header. And right below that, we've got an H4, and we're binding time to the text property of that header. And below that, we've got a div. And we're going to bind the abbreviation for that station to the text content of that div. And that's very powerful. You can bind to any property on your HTML element.
Yeah. That works not just for text content, but that also works for CSS properties as well. So very handy. Cool.
Should we run it and see what we got?
Sure. Let's do it. Control F5. Run. Oh, now we're starting to look like we've got a real application here. So there's our Muni, there's our BART, just because I love to do it. Yeah, awesome. Okay, we'll go over to our BART page. Okay, well, we're getting our data.
Let's not worry about that yet.
But data's there.
But we are getting data, so that's great. And now when we actually click on any of those stations, we'd like to be able to see the trains coming in and out of those stations. So
let's hook that up first.
Great.
All right. So once we were just on the section page that listed all of these stations, when we get down to the details of one, we need to get to the item page. So that's exactly where we're going to go.
Great.
Item. And we're going to start.
As you remember, on the item invoked, when we clicked, we handed that station piece of data onto the item page.
Absolutely.
So now we're going to take advantage of that piece of data to pull out the station data.
All right, we're going to replace this with. And this ready event is what happens, as you might imagine, when the page is ready, when we've navigated to that page and it's ready to load. And so all we're doing is we're taking that station, which was passed to us as an argument, and then it's got some properties attached to it. We're using those to populate some of the information here just using a regular query selector.
Great. And then we're setting a data source on our list so that we can see that data.
Excellent.
So once again, we need to go define our UI that shows us this data on our item page.
UI happens on the HTML page, so we're going to go to item.html.
So again, let's define a template.
All right. There you are.
And again, our template is going to bind using the DataWin bind syntax. And we're going to use destination and estimate. And then our list is going to loop through this and populate it for us.
Well, we've got to create the list first.
Yep, we need a list.
We're just going to replace our to-do there with items list. Here it is.
And so we see that div has been declared as a list using the DataWin control attribute. And we're setting some options that get passed to that list as well. And right above that, Ryan added an image. It's really nice if you can see where those trains are going, because unless you know the system really well, knowing that it's going towards Hayward, for instance, might not tell you if it's getting to your destination. So we're going to put that station map that's on the hub page directly within the items page as well.
Awesome. Cool.
All right, let's play with it.
All right, run it. Okay.
Great.
Data's there.
The data's there. But Ryan, it looks terrible.
It does. It does. Let me put on my hero cape and make this pretty again. All right. So we're going to go back to Blend. And fortunately, Blend and VS play super nice together. And Blend's going to pick up that there were a bunch of changes that happened in VS. We're going to go ahead and reload all of those. And before, we were just editing, you know, taking away sections that were on the front page. But all that UI that we want to customize, that's happening on the section page and the item page. So we're just going to use interactive mode, which essentially runs our application for us and allows us to, well, interact with the application, navigate to those pages. Well, we'll start with the item page. And when I exit, my design surface is updated so that I'm directly there on the item page and I'm free to go ahead and start styling. Well, that's exactly what I'm going to do here. I'm going to start by, let's see here. We're going to search for this guy here. We're going to search for section star. That kind of, oops, I'm in the projects pane. We'll go to Live DOM. There we go. All right, let's see if we can find these guys here. All right. So what I'm thinking here is that we'll move all of our list over into a column on the right-hand side. Well, when we're styling and we want to create columns, our best default is the CSS grid. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to turn this guy into a grid. Let's say display, choose MS grid. Okay, it's a little wonky right now. Don't worry, we'll get there. And I'm going to use the adorners directly on the page to create some columns out of that grid. Oh, now it's starting to look a little bit more like a real one. And so our image is nice and in the side there, but it looks like our list items are overlaying it. What we need to do is we need to move those into the third column. So I'll just set my grid column to 3 because there's 1, 2, 3 columns. And now they're over there. I noticed that these guys are kind of going off the page a little bit, so I'm actually going to bring them in. And they've also got this terrible black background on them. Let's see if we can get rid of that. I'm going to search here for when item box. Wow, that one's deep in there. There it is. And this guy, if I select View Set Properties Only, and I arrange by source, I'm going to find out that this background color was set in winListView.winItemBox, which it looks like, oh my gosh, this guy is declared in UI Dark. So UI Dark, because it's part of the SDK, is read-only. It's shared by every app that's on your system. So one of the skills that you need to learn real quick when you're styling Windows Store apps using HTML is how to overwrite UI Dark.
And this is just the same thing that you would do in your regular CSS files for your web page.
Totally. If you needed to overwrite a style, you'd create another style rule with higher specificity or lower down in the markup, right? So that's exactly what we're going to do. We're just going to copy the style rule, go into our own style sheet, paste it in there, and now I can set my background color to be transparent.
Oh,
and there
better.
We go. That's much better. Okay, so job's only half done. We've got the item page done, but we still need to get that section page fixed up. Let's go back using interactive mode again, navigate back to our section page. All right.
It looks pretty bad.
It could be better. All right, well, for starters, these guys are like you can only read the top half of them. So what I've done is I've just selected the element on the page, and I bet there's something that's causing these guys to be cut off. Well, if I look over here on the right, sure thing, this guy's got a max height. All right, well, something tells me we don't need that. So I'm just going to clear this guy out. Oh, brilliant. Okay, now we can actually read it. And here on the side here, you know, okay, I really would prefer that each item has some kind of anchor, something to visually kind of draw your eye. So let's grab this guy here. Maybe we'll give it a background. How about that? Background, we'll give it a background of white. Okay, but now I can't read the text. That doesn't do me a whole lot of good. All right, let's give it color of, let's see here. Let's actually make it the same color as the background. Okay, now I can see it. Top left corner could be better than that. Text align center. And all I'm doing here is setting CSS properties in the inline style of my element. And let's center that vertically as well. To do that, we'll just set the line height to be the same as the, okay. A little bit of extra work here to make it bold. And, oh, let's also make the font size bigger too, like 2M. Bigger, 3M. Okay. So that's looking pretty good, but I bet, oh look at this. That's too big. But one other thing that's happening here is that these guys are actually kind of overlapping there. So I want to set overflow to hidden so that it doesn't exceed the bounds. Last but not least, we got a bunch of, well, it's feeling a little square. Let's make them circles so that it's a little bit more kind of echoing that button there. And it feels kind of like, I don't know, like a London Underground feel. All right,
that was
cool.
What did you do with that adorner?
All I did is I used that to change my border radius, and now my border radius is essentially maxed out, so I turned my square into a circle. Kind of cool, I think so.
Yeah. It looks very metro-ish.
Ish, yeah.
Metro is in like trains and
right,
stuff.
Trains, not all right. Cool. So I think we're good now, but you know what? I wrote all of that into inline style. We want to be good web developers and not write everything into inline style. So
I knew that would kill you, right?
It does kill me. It just really irks my soul. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to create a style rule. There we go. From this element class, in this case, I'm going to create whenItemBox. Cool. And now, where'd that guy go? Oh, he went down to the bottom. He's not specific enough. Let's see if we can make this guy more specific. Here we go. So we can make this guy more specific by making his selector more specific. So we will use our style rule IntelliSense here to actually... Oh, we got one section element in there. All right. Let's see here. We've got one. If we use items list. Yeah, all right. That's still selecting all of them. I can see using my green style rule adorners. And let's see here. We know that those are all divs, so we'll make that div when items box 222 are selected. We'll just leave it at that one. When item box, that's still selecting all the right ones. And I want current selection 2. That's the right guy. All right.
All right, can we run it?
We can.
Great.
Bart? There it is.
Looking much better.
Looking much better.
Oh,
and there we go.
Better. But one thing I notice on that page is that there are a lot of stations, and I think I'm likely to only use a couple of those stations in any given day. It'd be nice if I could search.
We can do that. Let's add search.
Let's add search.
Let's use our fancy new search. All right. So we're going to start. We're going to go over to our header. Right here. And we'll put that search box in the header. I'm just going to...
And this is a standard search box that WinJS provides for you.
All right. I've got him in there.
You've got him on the hub page, though. Can we put him on the section page?
You're right. Sorry about that. Let's get him on the section page. There we go. Now we'll add them to the header. there, add in our search box. We're probably going to want to hook him up via JavaScript later, so that means we want an ID. I'm going to double-click on this guy and just give him an ID. Great.
Search box, very original.
Yeah, well. We're going to create a style rule selecting that, targeting that element ID. And let's give this guy, let's see here, we'll give him, I think this works. Box. Yeah, here we go. All right, so now he's over on the right-hand side, just by positioning him through grid column and grid row, but he's kind of butted up against the side there. So let's move him off by just a little bit using margin. 20 pixels. There we go, and all that's going into my hash search box style rule.
Great, let's make it work.
I think we can. I'm going to switch back over to VS.
Making it work sounds like code.
It does sound like code.
Yep, so let's switch over to VS.
All right.
And that search box is on our section page. So we're going to go to our section.js file. And the first thing we're going to do is handle the events that come from that search box. So let's wire up some event handlers. And I'd really like an experience for my users where as they type into that search box, it dynamically filters the results. So if they type L, it filters everything down to L. And if they type another letter, it further filters it down. So really, the same thing is happening whether you hit enter on that box or whether you hit another letter. So we're going to have the same event handler whether you query submit or query changed, whether you type another letter or whether you hit enter. And that's that search query submitted event handler. So let's go ahead and fill in that search query submitted handler. And we'll put some code into it a little bit later. But first, let's go ahead and filter that view of our data that we've gotten from BART. And what Ryan's done there is he's added filtering, a filtering projection. Our data list, our binding list, supports being able to filter down to a projection based on a search string. And that current search string property that we're going to be setting there is actually what we're going to be filtering on. And we're going to use two uppercase because then we can do case-insensitive searches for our users. And we're merely handing that in as our filter predicate. Cool. So now that we're actually setting the built BART data filtered station list, let's use that as our source for our list, our data source for our list instead of the station list.
Filtered station list, IntelliSense picks it right up.
Fantastic. And let's fill in some code for that search query submitted. In search query submitted, in the event args, we're going to get the string that's been typed into that search box. So I'm going to take that string and to uppercase it because, again, we don't want to be case sensitive here. And we're going to set that as the current search string. And then on our station list, we're just going to poke the members of that and say, you may be updated.
And that's what this notify mutated thing does. It's saying, hey, there's been an update, rebuild the list, and not just rebuild the list, but also do it using the personality visual library, that is the animations that are really kind of idiosyncratic to Windows.
And then one other thing, when somebody clicks on that particular station, we want to make sure that we're handing the right item. So on our item invoked, let's set the data source to be the filtered view rather than the complete view. Right. Okay. Yep.
Filtered station list. There we go.
Great. Let's watch
Save
it in action.
It. Control F5. All right. Moment of truth. Look at that.
And you can see that we're getting those nice animations on entrance on typing for entrance and exit for each of those items as they come in and out. Mm-hmm. It's a little hard to see. But the ones that were still in the list stay there, may move up a section or two. But it looks really nice, and our users are going to like that. Now, when you're adding search to your application, you really need to think about where that data is coming from. If you're pulling that data from an external data source, or it's very expensive to get it, then filtering on each type might not be the right thing, because that's going to cause a lot of back and forth for your data. So it may be the right thing for your scenario to wait until the users hit enter to filter that down.
Just be smart about network traffic, right? Yep. Just choose your events wisely. That's all we're saying.
We've got a small amount of data, so I think it's not going to matter. And I really like that type down kind of behavior.
Absolutely.
Great.
Cool.
So I would love to have a way on this application to see where we are. And because we're on Windows, we have geolocation. Let's take advantage of it.
Let's use it. Now, that sounds like a new feature, which sounds like a new section, which sounds like HubHTML is the place to put it. So we're going to navigate on over to HubHTML. We'll put this guy right down here on the end. We're going to call him, well, you are here.
Great.
All right? We kind of know where we're at.
And let's go fill in the code for that you are here section.
All right.
We're short on time, so we should do this.
Yeah, we'll do this quickly.
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to add our populate method to 54.
And this populate method is going to use the WinRT functions that can fill in that geolocation. And what we're doing is using windows.devices.geolocation.geolocator, a lot of words. But then we just called get geoposition async. And again, we're using a promise to pull back the result of that and access our coordinates. And then I'm using a link from virtual Earth to put that onto a map.
Yeah, just takes latitude and longitude. It's a simple and very well-documented API, and great if you're just trying to display a map on a page.
Great. Now let's call that method.
Sure. Right here. Is it in here?
Yes.
Yeah, right in here. There we go.
Great.
All we had to do was call it.
So let's run it in the debugger.
All right. Save. Run.
So let's go back one page.
Oh.
Uh-oh. So what happened? Visual Studio is telling us that our application did not declare that it wants to use geolocation. And that's something that your application needs to do if it's going to use special things from WinRT. It needs to tell users that it's going to ask for that capability so that users can accept or turn you down.
Yeah.
So let's go into the app manifest and declare that we're going to use geolocation. And Visual Studio has a nice app manifest designer that we can use where we can just go into capabilities and pick location.
Here we are.
All right, let's stop it and rerun it. And now that application asks us when it starts, would you like to let this application use your geo position? Let's say yes. And now let's navigate to BART and back so we refresh the page.
There it is.
And there we are.
Look at that, at the corner of 9th and
Howard. Fortunately, our geolocation worked with the wireless here, so it was good.
All right.
Fantastic.
Cool. So we know it's working.
Well, we're short on time. Should we try one more? All right, let's do it. Okay.
It
would be great to be able to turn on and off access to GPS through some kind of settings in our application. Because, for instance, you might be below San Francisco Bay on BART, and you're definitely not going to get any kind of GPS location from there.
Right. So you need to change your settings, right?
So app bars are the way to do them
in
Metro UI. And so you can swipe app bars up from the bottom. And let's see if we can add an app bar to our application.
Fortunately, VS provides an app bar in the default page. They just kind of comment them out as part of the regular template. So we're just going to uncomment it. Take that comment out. Now, the default app bar also contains a default button. We don't want a default button. We want our own button. So I'm going to go ahead and, as I have elsewhere, customize that by inserting my own button. All right.
So instead of a push button, we're going to use a toggle button that lets us turn something on and off.
And that's declared in data win options. I said that when process all runs, it looks for a couple of different attributes. Well, data win options is one of those other attributes. And data win options almost always contains what amounts to a JSON string of key value pairs.
Yep.
And it just so happens that one of those options that we've declared here is that it's of type toggle. The label, we get to specify the label that goes under the button, GPS enabled. And there's a whole bunch of icons that are kind of available to us just as part of the WinJS framework. We're going to use the one called world because it's GPS. You want to know where in the world you are. Yeah.
So let's make that thing work.
Okay. Actually, I'm going to go ahead and exit from debug mode here. I've been making all these edits in debug mode. All right, let's make it work.
So let's go over to default.js.
Okay.
And the first thing we'll do is we would like this to persist across openings and closings of our application. Because if you turn it off and then you open up your code again or your application again, you want that to still be off. So we're going to use local storage for your application. And that's as easy as calling windows.storage.application.current.localsettings. Yeah. And then you can store name value pairs right in that local settings. Yeah.
So this is local settings is specific to your device, so it does not travel with you. If you want to carry a, sort of a value or a setting across devices, use roaming settings instead of local. And also keep in mind that the storage space in local settings is very small. It's only 8 kilobytes. So you really want to constrain yourself to key value pairs here, like key equals true, key equals some number. If you've got a large amount of content, a blob of something that you want to save, use not local settings, but the application data store for that.
And also, this is fully ring-fenced. So what you put in there are things that only you can get to. You can't get to any other application's local settings, and no other application can get to yours.
Good stuff.
So let's go ahead and initialize that button correctly.
Can do.
Right in the then of our process all.
Okay. Right before our if. There we go.
And we're going to do some pretty basic stuff. We're going to add an event handler for clicking on that. We're going to save off our state and local settings there. And we're going to do things like, you know, setting the label. Cool. So let's handle that event click. In that toggle GPS button event handler.
47. There we are. Non-checkpoint right here, right? And
I think it goes down.
It does, down by one.
Yeah.
There we go. Thank you. Down by one.
There we go. And we're doing basic things. When you turn it on, when you toggle it was on, we turn it off. When it was off, you turn it on, and we're saving that to local settings. And we're setting our sftransportation.gpsDisabled property that we can access in other pages as well. Now that we're actually using that, let's make sure we respect that setting when we populate our hub.
So that happens when the hub page is loaded. We go to hub.js. And right here, where we're calling that populate UR here section, that's the moment where the map would get put in. Well, if they've said, no, don't, you know, disable GPS, then we probably want to abort mission before we ever try to populate that map. So we will just say, hotkey.
If disabled.
Thank you. If disabled. There we go.
And we'll just put a little piece of text in there that says GPS disabled so we don't show it. So let's run it.
Yeah. All right. All right. So we've got our UR here. We're going to right click. There's our app bar with our little world in there. We're going to click disabled. We'll go to another page. It looks like we've got a little rendering problem there. That's okay. We'll come back to that. And now, GPS disabled.
Great.
If we right click, we see that it remains disabled. And let's make sure that it persists across sessions. So we're going to shut down and then restart it. Once again, do Control F5. And there it is.
All right.
We persisted it by virtue of having that local settings saved.
Well, we're pretty much out of time. So
we are.
You can download this application on CodePlex. Let's switch back to the deck.
Yeah, totally. There we go.
And you can play with it yourself. It's all pretty standard code, and it's been up there since this morning.
Yeah. If you want to learn more about some of the subjects that we talked about here, want to hit next on that? Here's a couple of sessions that you might be interested in. The What's New in WinJS and building a UI both happened yesterday, but you can watch them on Channel 9. And then today we've got a great one on designing and building user interfaces for Windows. And if you'd like to learn more about build, I'll be talking in like 45 minutes, apparently.
About Blend.
About Blend, yeah.
Yeah. Fantastic. Awesome. Thanks for sticking with us.
Yeah, thanks, guys.